Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
On the phone, I'm very privileged to have Arnold August, speaking to him in Montreal, where he resides. He's a renowned author and journalist. Some of his books include Cuba and Its Neighbors, Democracy in Motion, Cuba-U.S. Relations, Obama and Beyond. He's an exceptional, accomplished journalist. He contributes articles in English and Spanish. He has spent extended periods in Cuba pursuing his intensive investigations, and he's recently back from Venezuela. Welcome to the show, Arnold.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you once again.
You've just returned from Venezuela. You were an election observer there. We're being told by all Western mainstream media outlets that these elections have been stolen, that Maduro is corrupt, he needs to step down. What were your observations? And just take us through how the Venezuelan elections operate.
The accusations by the U.S.-led opposition regarding the election results, that itself is a fraud because they are baseless. But let us leave that aside for the moment, and I'd like to share with your listeners how the famous electoral system in Venezuela is supposedly not valid, as balanced or whatever. You know, my experience there, right on the spot, while the elections were taking place in the voting booth, shows to the contrary. In fact, I would say, based on my experience, what I saw, as well as asking questions to our hosts from the electoral committee there, that there is no fraud at all. In fact, it's impossible. Let's go through one step at a time. For example, the first thing, when someone shows up to vote, as we saw there in Caracas last week, as they enter the voting hall, a small, room, they firstly they have to exercise a thumbprint on a special biometric machine. Now, why does the process demand a thumbprint? Two reasons. One, to assure that no one votes twice. As you know, in some countries, especially in Latin America, we have this notorious tendency or whatever that people try to vote twice, but because they have this thumb fingerprint, it eliminates any possibility of voting twice. There's another reason for having that thumbprint imprint, and that is the following: people have to be already registered by the time voting day takes place. In this case, July 28th, the citizen had to register before. So if everything is okay, they've already registered, then where do they go next? They go to, this is really fascinating, everyone should go to Venezuela to see the election just for that. They go to an electronic booth, a state-of-the-art touchscreen mechanical system where on the screen we see all the different candidates, the Maduro candidate, as well as the opposition candidates, everyone, their names and pictures show up on that screen. All the voter has to do is touch the screen on the candidate for which they are voting. Now, this is registered, and does this vote, mechanical vote, just sort of disappear in the internet? No, on the contrary, soon as that touchscreen vote takes place, the machine automatically prints out a paper trail of how that person voted. Now, that person has a chance to look at the paper trail, and if there's any discrepancy, there was a mistake, that the person did not vote for that candidate, the person has a right to challenge it, or even if they realize after accepting or receiving the paper trail, they realize that they made a mistake. They did not want to vote for that candidate, and yet they have another chance to vote for that candidate. So this is basically how it happens. It's important to take into account this automatic voting machine with its screen touch and all that, the state of the art. It is offline. It is offline during the whole process of elections in order to ensure that no one can hack into it, that no one can fiddle with the results. That is a very important step that the process has taken, has done in order to ensure no interference. Now, once the person receives the ballot in their hands, they go to another table, and there's another check up there that the person is on the list of those who have the right to vote. Once this is verified once again with a thumbprint, once again, then the person takes the ballot in their hands and moves to a small ballot box and deposits that paper trail ballot into the ballot box. Now, once the elections take place, after the elections finish at the end of the day, how does the voting take place? This is very important because a lot of the mainstream opposition, the mainstream media, they always talk about fraud when the voting takes place. Now, that's impossible. It's a fraudulent accusation. What did we see? When the voting takes place, after it's finished, every single party, opposition, Chavista or whatever, they have a right to send a representative to verify the counting of the votes in each polling station. So they are there. They can verify how the mechanical result, how that coincides with the actual printout. And once all the votes are counted, each representative of each party, Chavista or anti-Chavista, they have to sign off. Yes, what we saw here is right. Those electronically registered vote coincides to a T to the paper vote, right. And they sign off on that. Or they can challenge it. No, there's a mistake here. We cannot sign off because there's some kind of a mistake. It does not fit into the actual voting results.
The opposition in Venezuela, as you and me know, are quite rabid. They're willing to engage in military coups. They're willing to engage in violence. A few years ago, they declared a leader, Juan Guaido, out of the blue, who wasn't elected. He wasn't elected. Now, for months now, they've been saying, the opposition, that is, that they won't accept a loss. Let's talk about the opposition, where the Western media are referring to them as pro-democracy groups. Can we define what the opposition looks like in Venezuela?
Like you mentioned coup d'etat. Like what is important when we talk about, they challenge the election results. But, with the pretext of fraud, right? We know about that, Stuart. Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting. I did some investigation. The accusation of fraud was first raised by the opposition, the rabid right-wing opposition, back over 3 months ago. So 3 months ago, they accused the electoral system of being fraudulent, even before the elections took place. And of course, as the elections approached, 1, 2, 3, 4 days, and the day of voting, of course, they keep on repeating that a fraud took place, even before. So the basic goal is to create the false notion there is fraud, and then provide different scenarios to try to prove it. Now, for example, if they were really interested in getting to the heart of the matter, President Maduro, a simple worker, but a very militant revolutionary, how did he respond to the opposition call, you should count all the votes, we have to count all the votes? What did he do? He turned the tables on them in a very brilliant manner exactly 2 days ago. He said, okay, you want to count all the votes? He went to the Supreme Court of Venezuela, specifically the Electoral Committee of the Supreme Court, and he asked that the Supreme Court gets together all of the representatives of all the parties to show and count the electoral votes. That is, the opposition was actually, he was giving in to their demand. We want to recount. Okay, we'll count all the votes one by one. Let's go in front of the Supreme Court. Now, one would think, Stuart, the opposition, if they were at all principled, you and I know they are not, they say, okay, great, you finally conceded to our demand. We are going to count every single vote you know, publicly with the Supreme Court. But they didn't. They rejected it immediately by saying that Supreme Court is biased. So you have, firstly, saying several months before the elections that there will be fraud. And as soon as Maduro said, let's count the votes, they said, no, 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 we're not going to participate. So, you know, the basic thing is they are not interested in election, Stuart. They're not interested in democracy. They're not interested in counting votes. They basically create a lie that the votes are fraudulent, and then they fit all of their narratives into it. In fact, their so-called proof with regarding fraud was completely taken apart by one of the leaders of the Venezuelan Revolution on TV a couple of days ago, in which he pointed out there are dozens of, this is taking into account what they have found with regards to the oppositions. He said there are thousands of voting records without the signatures of the voting machine operators, something that invalidates a voting record. I mentioned before, when the voting takes place, the representative of each party has a right to be there. But he pointed out that in many occasions, they did not sign off on the count. And also, it's important to know, there are voting records without the information and signatures of witnesses, voting machine operators, and voting center members. You know, so a lot of, you know, while they were in that voting count that took place, like, you know, virtually publicly, they did not sign off properly. They did not challenge any of the results coming out of the simultaneously coming out of the voting machine and the paper trail. They just, you know, didn't really take part in that whole thing. But yes, they gave themselves the right to say fraud took place. Just as the same, they give themselves the right. We are not going to the Supreme Court to count all the votes for you. So, you know, with you. So this is really what it's all about. In my view, they just made up this thing about fraud a long time ago, and they keep up hacking away with it. And of course, the mainstream media just, you know, sings that same song with them.
And we also know the global compassionate United States, who loves to care about human rights, especially in countries that have large quantities of oil. Within an hour of the election, Anthony Blinken was saying doesn't feel that the votes represent the public's will, and also his vassals in Latin America, Malay and Argentina came out. So can we talk about the global response? I mean, we had a few years ago where they all stood around the UN and they all declared Juan Guaido the president, legitimate president, including Canada, shamefully. So can we talk about the global response towards Venezuela?
Yeah, of course. The global response, of course, we have to start with the United States. They're the leader of this orchestra against the Maduro government and against Chavismo. You know, it's interesting to note, when Maduro said, let's count the votes with the Supreme Court, a couple hours after that, Blinken made a rather somewhat ambiguous statement that it's necessary to go through the process, count the votes and all that. But by the end of the day, on August 1st at 6 p.m., he made a very definite statement recognizing the loser as being the real president of Venezuela. I mean, these how arrogant they are. They completely ignore the fact that by the Constitution, by the law in Venezuela, the sole responsibility, the sole sovereign responsibility of providing electoral results falls on the National Electoral Commission. That is the sovereign body that does so. But they could be completely ignored. They could take, you know, this false, you know, source of evidence that the opposition is using with regards to voting. You know that their website that purports to be giving the correct information on voting, did you know that this website was created just one day before the voting took place? So this whole thing is being manipulated by a so-called, you know, altered voting system. It's amazing. People are voting in Venezuela, the United States, and their allies such as Argentina. They said, no, no, no. What's important is this website that has been, you know, created probably in Miami and all that. So the basic goal, you know, what he recognized yesterday afternoon that they recognize the opposition as the real victor in the election without any proof at all. So, you know, of course, yes, they're very much, their main goal is what? You said it. They are going after oil. In addition, you have Elon Musk, who's playing a very important role in the narrative against Maduro. What is he interested in Venezuela? It also has lithium. So you have the natural resources in Venezuela, which are very important for the United States and their allies. But I would like to add another point, which is not often mentioned as to the goals of the United States and their allies, and that is political, ideological. The United States, the West, especially, for example, Latin America, United States, Argentina and others, and of course Canada also jumps on the bandwagon, even though it's not quite as militant as the United States and Argentina. They cannot allow Chavismo to exist as a political movement, as an ideological movement. Like, what are they afraid of? You know, they talk about that Venezuela, Maduro had only 51% of the votes. And we're talking about more than 5 million people, 5 million Chavistas who were conscious enough to reject all of the mainstream narrative with regarding Maduro, with regarding the United States being a better option to Venezuelan political system. They rejected. I was there, you know, several times in my first visit. I have never, Stuart, ceased to be amazed by the political consciousness of the 5 million, 6 million Chavistas, who, despite all of the disinformation, are firm and very clear as to not only the need for 21st century socialism, as Chavez and now Maduro claim that they are developing, which I think they are in favor of that. And the United States does not want this ideology, this notion to spread that people can take their things into their own hands, have a sovereign nation, and therefore, based on that, build a new kind of, you know, 21st century socialism. It's not just oil. It's not just lithium. It's that, but also the notion that these ideas can spread. Allow me to give you an example. You mentioned, I think you mentioned CBC. You know, I watch Evan Wire of the CBC very, very closely. And I would suggest to the people on the left, the United States, Canada, and elsewhere, if you want to see, have a crystal ball as what the aims of the United States is with regards to Venezuela in general and the current situation, don't go to the Wall Street Journal, don't go to the New York Times, don't go to any other openly right-wing outlets such as Miami Herald. No, go to Evan Dwyer of the CBC. Just yesterday, he reported, not from Venezuela, he reported from the streets of Toronto. You know, pointing to a few people from Venezuela, you know, those who are opposed to Maduro, as well as the Cubans who oppose the government there. So this is the issue now. What is happening now? People are hoping for. He said, this is what he is hoping for. But he said, people are hoping for that with the so-called defeat of Maduro, that this will spread, like a domino effect will spread, and it will also lead to the overthrow of the government in Cuba, as well as in Nicaragua, as well as in Bolivia. So this is the actual game plan. Wow. And it came out of the mouth of a so-called Canadian journalist, Evan Dwyer. He's right in the sense that is the goal of the United States, not only to defeat Venezuela, but based on that, to go further and also overthrow the governments and the revolutions in Cuba, as well as in Nicaragua and Bolivia. It's a very serious situation, Stuart. And they are actually talking the issue of a possibility of military intervention against the Maduro government is real. I do not want to be alarmist, but we, the progressive people on the left who anti-US, we have to take into account that they will not, the United States and their allies will not stop at anything. If they see the possibility of carrying out a military intervention after creating chaos in Venezuela as a so-called pretext, they will do so. They will do so. I mean, this is the same United States government has so much arrogance with regards to Palestine. It's the same United States government who can do the same thing against the people of Venezuela. And I think that they are mistaken, because those 5 million, 6 million Chavistas, plus the military civic unit, that is the militias, the people who are armed on their own, along with the government, along with the army, they are armed to the teeth and politically conscious, and they can resist a U.S. interference in Venezuela.
Well, let's hope it never comes to that. And I want to say that there's an expression, the power of a good example. And that's what Venezuela, when Chavez came in, he had this radical concept that the resources, the wealth and the resources of the land belong to the people of Venezuela, belong to making people literate, belong to giving housing, belong to making things available. And for those in the West who point their finger and criticize the poverty in Venezuela, any country will scream if the United States has such massive sanctions. But despite all these sanctions, Venezuela, as you said, perseveres because they have political consciousness. And for those in the West who wax about democracy, look at our cities. Look at the homelessness. Look at the poverty in these countries here. And we're sending billions of dollars to interfere in other elections. We're sending billions of dollars for weapons and war. I mean, it's an absolute disgrace. So what can we learn as progressives? I've been a little jaded towards progressives flip-flopping on their anti-war stance. But what can we as true progressives learn from the Venezuelans?
I think the most important thing, I just to add one point, you mentioned a very important point. Like how many homeless people are there in the streets of the United States and Canada? Thousands and thousands and thousands. While on the other hand, the good example, as you mentioned, Venezuela, using the income from the oil, which they did not have before the Chavista revolution, using that income from oil, they have given literally millions of homes, brand new homes, free to the people of Venezuela. And despite all the sanctions and the problems, do you know that they brought the inflation rate from previously 1,000 and plus and more to June all the way down to 1%? That is an amazing accomplishment. And as I go through the streets of Caracas, I saw with my own eyes that the shops are not empty. The shelves are full, whether it's in a pharmacy, a local grocery store. The shelves are full. And one of the reasons is that despite the sanctions, despite all the other economic hardships caused by the United States, the incapacity, for example, of Venezuela to have access to funds from the World Monetary Fund, etc., that Venezuela is 96% self-sufficient in food. That's an amazing accomplishment. If you think food, housing, education for free, millions of people are going to universities in Venezuela. Young Venezuelans are going to university for free. What a major accomplishment. And health has also developed so much. As Cuba initiated in the beginning, after Chavez came to power, to build the health system, but the Venezuelans are building that on their own. But, you know, they have a very high political level. I had the pleasure of listening to some of the panels while I was in Caracas on the economic situation. And one thing struck my mind. There was an economist from a think tank in Venezuela who gave such a great explanation of how Venezuela is developing its economy. Amongst other things, she put accent on what they have done since the Chavez came to power in 1968 was to develop the productive forces. And she gave the very good example of China. China is succeeding. Why? Amongst other reasons, she saw it with her own eyes, because she went there to China when President Maduro visited the country in September 2023. She saw with her own eyes, as an economist, how China is. It's a miracle. They have been developing the productive forces. And based on that, they have been able to bring millions and millions of people out of extreme poverty, one of the most historic events in my view, and it's taken place in this century, to bring so many people out of poverty. And Venezuela is learning from that, building productive forces. And actually, that actually was part of the electoral campaign, one of the important planks of the of Maduro's election that just took place a week ago. Build the productive forces. Keep on making sure the small local business people, you know, small people have small businesses, developing that as well, as more and more countries, socialist countries, realize you cannot have a 100% state economy. We have to have let loose the energy, the initiative, the creativity of local producers, of local of people who want to start up these small businesses. These are being encouraged by Venezuela. So on one hand, you have the major development of the state productive forces, at the same time, simultaneously and parallel, also encouraging and helping in many ways the local enterprises that are developing, the local communes. You know, Venezuela is based on local communes. You have, you know, communism within the Bolivarian 21st century socialism. People who in these local areas, something that, of course, we never see in Canada or the capital as well, actually have their own communes there in which they carry out production according to their needs, prices according to their needs. A whole new system, a whole new model that has been developed in Venezuela. And I think in addition to lithium and oil, I think that the ideological, political stance and experience of the Bolivarian Revolution or 21st century social, this is what is at stake. This is why the United States wants to smash that.
This is a beautifully put, Arnold. And people in the West will step over 20 homeless people to wax about democracy in Venezuela. So, I say we can learn a lot and we can collaborate and we can reach out. But the first step in educating ourselves politically, or the political consciousness you talk about, is learning and reading and educating ourselves. So how can people access your writings, your work, and some of the publications you put out?
I have a brand new, completely renovated, modern website, www.arnoldaugust.com. Arnold August as my name, no periods or whatever. www.arnoldaugust.com. All of my books are there, as well as all of my art. I wrote about 40 articles in Venezuela. You can have access to these articles free on my new website, as well as some YouTubes that I've done, interviews that I've done in various aspects, including with regards to Venezuela.
I love it, and I'm going to put a link to your website below this interview, and I encourage everyone to go, because you're right on the cutting edge of all these issues, Arnold. And I really appreciate you spending a few valuable moments with us this morning.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate you spending your valuable time with me. Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to collaborate with Latin Waves.
Thank you for listening to Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an independently produced syndicated radio program made available for free to campus and community radios, and also to the world at latinwavesmedia.com. Please visit the website to hear previous shows, hear about upcoming events, and consider becoming a member for as little as $1 per month.